Alrighty, guys, this is one of those weeks where we do not have time for jokes. We don't have time for any comedy skits here at the beginning of the episode. We need to hurry up, get right to the episode, because Ahsoka just gave us, quite possibly, the single best episode of this entire series so far. Episode 4 was phenomenal. Let's get into it. Colby, you know what to do, buddy. Give us that music. My name is Johnny J, and this is episode 68 of the DMSW podcast and episode 4 of our Ahsoka recap show miniseries. All right, so as you just heard, only one voice in the opener this week. Unfortunately, my co-host for this Ahsoka recap show is feeling under the weather this week. Tim is down for the count at the moment. He is feeling, just to give you an idea of how sick Tim is actually feeling today, when I checked in with him earlier, he still has not even felt good enough to watch episode 4 of this Ahsoka series, so we wish Tim all the best. Hopefully he gets better soon. It has been an absolute pleasure joining him here on the DMSW podcast every Thursday for these Ahsoka episodes together. It's been really a ton of fun working with him, so hopefully he bounces back, gets some vitamin C, and gets back to 100% here by next week, because we will definitely miss hearing Tim here on the episode with us this week. But we have a great guest lined up for you guys here today. And before we get into that interview, want to remind everybody, thanks to our good friend Brian from the Rope Dropping Knowledge podcast. He has stepped up to the plate here in a big way to help listeners of this Ahsoka recap show on the DMSW podcast. He is giving up his Star Wars The Black Series Force FX Elite Ahsoka Tano lightsaber. This is a legit collectible. This is a big time item here for you guys that is up for grabs, and it doesn't cost you anything to get entered into this giveaway. All you have to do is head over to Instagram, follow this show's account on Instagram at the DMSW podcast. You're going to want to follow Tim's podcast that he hosts with his wife, Dreaming of Disney, and you can find them on Instagram at dreaming.of.disney.podcast, and absolutely follow Brian as well, who, like I said, was so generous to help us out here and donate this lightsaber as a giveaway for this show. You can find Brian and his wife Tracy and the podcast that they host, the Rope Dropping Knowledge podcast. You can find them on Instagram at Rope Dropping Knowledge. So follow those three accounts on Instagram. And then if you go back to episode 64 of this DMSW podcast, when we had Brian on as our guest, we give away a code word on that episode. If you go to Brian's podcast, the Rope Dropping Knowledge podcast that released on Friday, September 1st, you will pick up a second code word that is hidden in that episode. And then third, you're going to head over to Tim's podcast, the Dreaming of Disney podcast, his episode that released on Monday, September 4th, and you're going to pick up that final and third code word. You put those three code words together and send them to me through a DM on Instagram at the DMSW podcast. Let me know what those three code words are. Follow all three of us on Instagram, and you will be entered in this lightsaber giveaway. As I said, this is a legit collectible item here. This is big time. If you throw this thing into your Google machine on your home laptop, you will see that this is not one of these cheap $20, $25 lightsabers that you can pick up at the nearest gift shop there at the Disney parks. This is a majorly cool collectible item for any Star Wars fan. Even, as I've said before, if you yourself are not a major Star Wars fan, I'm sure you have a friend or a family member who is a big-time Star Wars fan. This is a very easy way for you to get entered and possibly win this lightsaber, and then you can give that to your Star Wars buddy as a gift, and you'll be their hero for the rest of the year for sure. So make sure you check out that giveaway. It will run until October 1st. So you have almost a month to collect those three code words, go back, listen to those three different podcast episodes, follow us all on Instagram and shoot us that DM and get yourself entered into a chance to win this very, very cool lightsaber prize that Brian so generously donated and gave up for us to use here on the show. So thanks again to Brian so much. And again, just want to say one more time, Tim, rest up, buddy. Hope you're feeling better soon. Definitely missed having you here on the show with me this week, but can't wait to have you back with us next week for episode 5. We will have another fantastic guest lined up to join us and talk all about Ahsoka episode 5. But for today's episode, very excited, very cool guest here. Again, we have just absolutely lucked out and hit a home run here every single week. Every guest that we have had here on the show has just been absolutely fantastic. They have brought their Star Wars knowledge, their Star Wars love and passion, and this week is no different than all the rest. This is another fantastic guest for you guys, and I can't wait to introduce them to you. So without further ado, let's get over to today's guest. Alrighty, our guest on the show tonight comes to us live from Baltimore, Maryland. And if you have seen the movie Wedding Crashers, you are familiar with the hilarious quote from that movie: "Crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does." Now, I have a feeling, though, that our guest tonight will be able to prove that Maryland can do some Star Wars content as well, in addition to crab cakes and football. So I want to welcome to the show for the very first time, Steven from the Parks Academy podcast. Steven, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Hey, Johnny. It's good to be on here. And I would like to just very quickly take a quick second to say I'm not a Baltimore Ravens fan. I am a San Francisco 49ers fan, and I cannot align with the Ravens. So I just want to make sure that is very clear, although crab cakes are in fact delicious and they're even better here. So it's that is a point.
important information to get out there. It is that time of year. It's September. The NFL season is kicking off. So it's good to get the air clear there. You are a California boy based in Maryland. Based in Maryland.
Yes. I live in, my wife is from, my wife and dear co-host, a beautiful co-host, Paige, is from Baltimore. So she's from here. That's how I ended up out here. But she did not want to be on this episode because she was like, nothing sounds worse to me than deep diving into Ahsoka Tano. She's never seen a single clip of the animated series, and she puts up with the live action because I love it. So that's sort of where all that's from.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So that podcast there that Steven just mentioned that he hosts with his lovely wife, Paige, is the Parks Academy podcast. You can check out all 75 of their episodes right now on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, and Overcast. And if you like what you hear, you can also find them on Patreon to get early access to their episodes, shout outs on their show, and more exclusive content as well. If you want to find them on social media, you can reach out to them on Facebook and Instagram at The Parks Academy. And one of the coolest things about their show is they have, especially for the Star Wars fans that are going to be listening to this episode here today, they have one of the most perfect sponsors that you could ever have as a Star Wars fan, and it is the Neo Sabers Company. You can find that website, neosabers.com. And I'm not even going to attempt to tell you guys how cool these sabers are. I want to give the floor right back over to my buddy Steven here and let him tell you guys how cool these sabers are.
Okay, so yeah, these are incredible. I'm a collector of, I'm like an amateur collector of lightsabers. So I have one saber from Savi's Workshop, two legacy sabers, the yellow Rey saber, and then the reforged Luke Skywalker blue saber. And I really wanted to buy one of those like $600, lightsabers, but I was really thinking to myself that it would be an unwise investment to do so. And I got hooked up with these guys because, so we have a blog post on our website called Every Legacy Lightsaber, and it has like all the new information and prices and updates and stuff like that. And it, for some reason, ranks really, really well on Google. And so the folks over at Neo Sabers reached out to me and were like, hey, we'd love to have you backlink to one of our articles about Cal Kesta and, you know, his saber from why am I forgetting the name of the video game? Fallen Order?
Fallen in Order, right? Yep.
Yeah. And so I did
Jedi
that.
Jedi Fallen
like,
in Order.
Yeah, that's right. So I did that for them. And I was like, listen, I really want to talk to you guys about maybe sponsoring our show. And this is kind of what it would take and, you know, whatever. And they're like, awesome. Would you like a saber to check it out? And I'm like, I would like a saber to check it out. So they sent me the Return
Heck
of the
yes.
Jedi, my favorite Return of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker saber. And first of all, the Legacy Saber, the one thing that's held me back from buying that thing in Disney World or Disneyland is that when you want to actually activate the blade, you have to replace the top of it. And so instead of this really sleek kind of like, gold color that's very thin and beautiful, you get this big chonky thing, and you know what I'm talking about, it just looks so ugly.
Because
they just don't have the technology to actually fit the blade in and have it look good. And so theirs, first of all, it does that, which is like 100 million bonus points, but also like they are so well crafted. When I picked it up, it was like cold, which means like it's actually made out of metal. It's super high quality. It feels really good. Like it's got a weight to it, but it's not overly heavy. I mean, everything about it.
Did you hear Luke Skywalker's voice when you put your hand on it for the first time?
I did. He's like, why do you have my saber, doc? So, but the thing that's super cool about it.
Steven, your time has come.
The thing that's really cool about it to me is that it is extremely diverse, and like it comes with a handbook and a PDF, like a big PDF document that you have to like actually study. So it's like a study manual that comes with it, because there's all these different like wrist actions that you have to do activate it, to change its color, to change the volume, to change the way that the blade, like the speed in which the blade, you know, activates, the sound that it makes, whether it's like unstable or whether it sounds more like a Jedi or like a fractured Sith saber. You can pick all these different colors. You can set it up to where it's like an electric shock, so like more of like a Sith kind of electric sort of power. You can set it up to where when you swing it, it sounds like it's dragging against the ground. I mean, it is like so crazy. And thank God they have an app, so you can actually download their app too, because you can just do all these presets and check it out and like set it up how you want it. So it basically kicks the Legacy lightsabers in Disney completely out of the water. I don't think I would ever buy one from them again, because I'm just so in love with these custom sabers. So, there's really not a lot more.
Right?
You never forget your first Luke Skywalker Return of the Jedi lightsaber. So anyway, if you want to, you can get 10% off from them using the code TPA10 at checkout. They actually are running a Labor Day sale like right now. And they always have these sales going on. Like they had a princess sale and then a Ahsoka Tano sale. Like there's all these things going on that they do. So check them out. Their sabers range anywhere from, I think, like $150 is like the lowest to like these basic hilts, you know, maybe $199, all the way up to like $400 or $500. So there's a lot of variety. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg, no pun intended, for Star Wars, to get one of these things. Yeah, or hand. But I would highly recommend it. They're incredible. They are. And it's not just because they're a sponsor. Like, I love this thing. And it's on my wall, and I look at it every single day when I'm working.
Yep. So as you can see, I don't even know why we had this guest on tonight. This guy clearly doesn't really care that much about Star Wars, but we'll do our best to fumble along here.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's overrated.
If you want to get more information on these sabers, and you heard Steven mention his blog post there, definitely check out their website, theparksacademypod.com. They have all their special links on there. All their podcast episodes are on there. The blog is on there. All their social media information is on there as well. So that's your best spot to go check them out first, at theparksacademypod.com. Now,
yep.
Steven and Paige are just absolutely crushing the Disney podcast game right now, and I was honored to be invited on their show recently to take part in their World Showcase series to talk about the Italy Pavilion. So thank you again, sir, first and foremost, for that invite. We had a ton of fun the other night recording that episode together. But for the folks out there listening to this podcast that haven't heard your show before, can you let them know just in general what you guys do on the show, and also get into the World Showcase series? Let them know what they can hear right now if they check it out.
Yeah, so Paige and I, we started off our podcast, it was, I guess, 2022, so March of 2022, we kind of kicked it off. And basically, we kind of started it off like every other Disney podcast where we're like, you know, rank your top favorite rides or would you rathers or whatever. And we sort of started finding our footing as we got into it. And we were like, well, we have the name Academy. So we should probably like actually try to be academic to some degree. So we started doing interviews with artists. We started talking about historic events in the parks, whether it's like the history of churros or like the history of park icons. We did a whole park icon mini series that was a lot of fun. We talked about, you know, how like Sleeping Beauty's castle was kind of constructed and built and all the thousands of cats that lived inside of it, all the way to, you know, talking about like Mickey's Sorcerer's Hat and MGM at the time and what that was like. So it's really become a lot of fun for us. And we're able to kind of take it from a little bit less of just like a, you know, Disney fanatic and Disney fan podcast, more of like a, hey, here's a lot of the history and interesting information that will come with these parks that everyone loves so much. And we try to do our best to kind of provide a different angle and a different perspective that maybe some people don't think about when they think about the parks. So we are currently in the heat of our World Showcase miniseries. We just wrapped up Japan, and that was so much fun. We finished that one, and it came out on Monday. And then on the 18th, that's Johnny's going to be on with us for the Italy Pavilion, and that one's a lot of fun. You don't want to miss it. We have a lot of interesting takes on a lot of things. So Johnny really brought the heat for that one, and we're glad to have had him as a guest. So don't miss it. September 18th. That is when that one comes out.
Good stuff. Yeah, it's been a very fun series. Been listening the whole way through. Every week you guys hit a different country, kind of going right around the World Showcase there. So ton of fun. Definitely check out all those other episodes that they've done so far as well. Now, when you guys were thinking about starting your podcast originally, were you already fans of a bunch of different Disney podcasts at the time and you were kind of like, we got to get in on this game too? Or is it more of just podcast fan in general, true crime or movies or something, and thought, hey, let's put a Disney spin to it and get in on this?
That's a really good question. So yes and no. We listened to a couple of very popular Disney podcasts, and I'm not going to say the names of them, because we noticed that there was a lot of complaining in these things. And so what happened was we would like listen together when we were in the car, and the host would just complain about, oh, Bob Iger this and the fans that and the lines and the price. And, you know, we're like, I don't want to listen to a big complaining fest about something that I like. It's just not very fun. Then we listened to another one that we really liked, and we liked it okay, but we were like, ooh, they're getting a lot of their facts incorrect. And it's just not really something that we feel like is kind of the best representation, you know. So we had at the time we had our 3-month-old in the car. We were driving back home from Massachusetts for a friend's wedding. We had our 3-month-old in the back
seat.
Heck
of a state.
Driving
Heck
home.
Of a state, that Massachusetts.
Oh, it's really nice. we're driving home and we're listening to something, and I'm like, you know, we could totally do this ourselves if we wanted to. I'm kind of a tech nerd. And so I like, you know, I run my own digital marketing company. I'm very into like AV stuff and whatever. And so I'm like, I kind of have everything we already need to get started right now, except for like 2 podcast mics, but everything else I have. So why don't we just see what happens? And so we just jumped into it and started that way. Like Paige really has listened to like a lot of podcasts about, you know, pop culture and some inspirational stuff. I listened to a ton of podcasts about like movies and tech and, you know, stuff like that. And just some like, you know, culture and society sort of stuff. So yeah, that's sort of how we got into it, and it's been a lot of fun.
Good stuff. I mean, that's the name of the game. Everybody in the Disney podcasting space is trying to find their niche, and like I said, you guys are doing a great job of being in a podcast space where there are literally hundreds and thousands of Disney podcasts out there, but you guys clearly have a style that kind of really separates you from the rest of the pack. It's been a ton of fun getting to know you guys and listening to more and more episodes along the way.
Well, I really appreciate that. And another thing I'll say too is it's been really fun because we've made some friends along the way, you know. So like you, for instance, have been great, and we've become friends with Make It Magical and Market House, out free publicity, and they're going to be on the show too for this World Showcase series. But what's fun about it is we all kind of started like around the same time, roughly. Like I know that, for instance, with Emily and Clayton, we started like literally the same, like within a week or two of each other, and we didn't know each other. We just kind of started following each other on Instagram. We're like, oh, we're like writing each other questions and stuff like that about, you know, how are you doing this or that? Yep. And it's been fun. So it's nice to kind of have a small community of people that are very interested in what we're interested in as well. So that way it doesn't really feel kind of, because sometimes we have to explain to people like why we do a podcast about theme parks. And like, okay, that's fine. But when you actually have like friends who kind of know what you're doing and are doing it as well, it makes it more fun and feels like it's kind of, I don't know, almost like a different little avenue in your life that's kind of just for you. So it's cool.
Yeah, I echo all those same statements. As a little bit of kind of my backstory, I was more like your classic just New England-based sports fan, just spoil rotten up here with all our fantastic teams that we've had up here right through my prime kind of sports and sports years of my life, 20s and 30s, getting to watch all my teams win a championship. But that eventually kind of, once the pandemic hit, that kind of passion went down a little bit, and I was looking for something new. And for me, I'm a guy that loves competition. That's why I was drawn to sports, love watching sports and debating about that with friends. But once the pandemic hit, kind of that passion kind of came away or kind of came down for me for getting into sports as hardcore as I got into them. And I was looking for a kind of a new place to get into and find a new hobby where competition wasn't the main driving force behind it. And I'm sure you feel the same way. The Disney podcasting space is one of the kindest and most supportive groups of in the internet space that I think you can get into. Just literally every Disney podcast that I've reached out to has written back and conversed back and forth. And like you said, everyone's bouncing questions off each other, throwing opinions at each other. And that just, I haven't met that podcast yet where it's been like, no, we're trying to get as many downloads as we can. We can't be helping you. You're our competition. It is just teamwork makes the dream work all the way through. It's totally great stuff.
Totally. I love that. Couldn't agree more.
Cool. All right. So were you guys lifelong Disney kind of super fans from kids growing up? Or did you kind of get more into it as you got older and started growing your family and having kids?
We were both extremely into it from a very young age. I started going to the parks when I was really young. So I started going to Disneyland around, I think my first time was like 8 or 9. My parents were the kind of people that were sort of more like, let's take them a little bit later so they remember it, which is fine because I do remember that trip extremely well. So there was a method to it, I suppose. Paige grew up going to Disney World. And so that's kind of another small, you know, side street about our show is that we thought there was a lot of fun that we both grew up in different parks. So that added kind of something else too. But we grew up lifelong fans. I actually had a season pass in high school or no college, excuse me, in early college. I had an ex-girlfriend who lived down in Los Angeles. And so I would like go see her a lot and like have my, season pass. And she was like right there. So it was cool. Like I went a lot and then I kind of fell out of it for a short period of time. Paige and I started dating, we got engaged, got married. And then our first year of marriage, we went to Disney World together. It was my first time in 2017. And I just loved it. Like, I was like, this is great. And then we went back again in 2019 we went back. Yeah, so we went to, let me go back a little farther. 2016, we went to Disneyland together for the first time. It was her first time there. 2017, we did Disney World together for the first time. It was my first time there. Then we went, I think it was not until 2019 we went back again to Disney World, and then we went to Disneyland in 2020, Disney World in 2021, then 2022, and we haven't gone this year, but we're not going to go this year, unfortunately, so our streak is broken. But yeah, we've always been fans. It's always been something we've really enjoyed. And as you become like more of an adult with kids, it's a little bit less, I don't want to say the word weird, but it feels a little bit less weird to me to be like super into, you know, the parks and stuff, and Disney now that I have a little girl, especially. Like, she got super into Toy Story recently. Like, so, like we watch all 4 movies at least once a day. It's kind of insane. And so she's really, really into Toy Story right now. So a couple weeks ago, I pulled out my Woody and Buzz from 30 years ago, literally. And, you know, she's like, awesome. She loves them. She, like, has them in her bed with her and stuff. It's a lot of fun. So having kids definitely heightens it, but even before then we were still, you know, pretty big fans.
Awesome. Yeah, it is cool to see how what particular movies your kids kind of gravitate towards, and then like you said, they'll be just latched on to Toy Story and that'll be all they want to watch for months and months and months, and then just a switch turns and now they're into Finding Nemo and Finding Dory or something like that.
Yeah,
it's very fun as a as a Disney fan, to kind of watch that through their eyes and see what they fall in love with and how that changes as they grow up as well.
Fortunately, Toy Story is extremely bearable to have on over and over and over again, so it makes it easy.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, that's the good thing about Pixar, is I've always said, like, they do a great job of making clearly an animated movie for kids, but they always add that extra element and put enough into it where there's clearly, like, it's two movies going on at the same time. There's
totally
the basic kind of kids movie, and then there's that adult element kind of hidden in the background as well, which is why, to me, they've been so good at what they do for so long, is they nail that on almost every movie they do.
Right.
All right, so this is the Ahsoka recap show, so let's get into the Star Wars side of things. Similar type of question here for you with the Disney questions. Tell us about your Star Wars background. How did you kind of first get into it? Was somebody getting you into the movies, or where did that whole adventure start for you?
So I have to attribute all of my Star Wars love to my dad. He introduced me to Star Wars when I was young, and this was I feel like I can count myself fortunate because I saw Star Wars before The Phantom Menace came out. So it was the old, like, dad sat us all down and he's like, we're going to watch these tonight together as a family. And here's everything you need to know. Like, I'm not even kidding. I actually think that my dad went to his computer, like, fired up SBC Global and, like, printed up a synopsis of the movie to explain some things to us before we watched it. And, this is, like, not even a joke. And, like, explains some things to us before we watched it. So he's like, okay, so these are what Jedi are. This is a Sith. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, this is his name. This is kind of what you're going to be expecting and what to look for. And so we all sat down, and he obviously did the thing where he read us the title card and, you know, the scroll and stuff. And I remember just being extraordinarily blown away by it. Like, it was one of the cooler things I'd ever seen. And then we kind of went, you know, night by night and watched Empire and then, you know, Jedi and stuff. So I was very, very into it as a kid. And then, when Phantom Menace came out, I, did not see that one in theaters. I was, I was still kind of young, and I hate to put myself on blast, but Darth Maul kind of scared me a little bit when I first saw him. And so I wasn't so sure if I could do that or not. But I ended up seeing it, and I loved that movie. And everything, I have to say, really just, like, flipped for me when I saw Attack of the Clones. So that movie came out in 2002, which actually coincided with my very first trip to Disneyland. And so on one of our days that we took off, my family watched, you know, like, in hotels back in the day, like, you could actually rent movies that were still in theaters on the terrible TVs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So my family had like a break day. We were going to go back to the park later on that evening. We were staying in some off, you know, property hotel and right off of Ball Street.
Yep.
And they were like, we're going to watch Attack of the Clones. So I remember sitting in our hotel on our two queen beds. I was thinking I was sitting next to my sister and my parents in the other bed, and we watched it. And I remember, like, being like, this movie is so good. It is good. Like, I don't care, the acting's awful, but it is good. George Lucas tried. The thing that sticks out to me the absolute most is when Yoda pulled out his lightsaber for the first time, and that's the first time anyone ever saw that happen. And I think my mom was like, oh my gosh, no way, that is so crazy. And, like, my parents were, like, hooting and hollering the entire time that he was fighting, you know, Sidious and stuff, and it was amazing. Sure. It was just amazing. So, not Sidious. Sorry, who did he fight the first time? He fought Dooku the first time, right?
Yeah, Dooku.
It was Dooku, when he fought Dooku. Yep. Yeah, yeah. When he fought Dooku for the first time, because Anakin and Obi-Wan were incapacitated. So yeah, that was kind of really my big introduction to it. And I had, like, all the action figures. I had all the lightsabers. I had the Star Wars Jedi Dex, the little handheld thing that you would, like, you know, could look up information in. I mean, I was, like, all in on Star Wars.
Awesome. Now, on your website, under your profile, under your favorite ride from the parks, you actually have listed Star Tours, which shocked me. I don't think I've heard a single person ever say that was their favorite ride. So let us know. Clear the air here. Is it truly your favorite ride? And if so, is it the Disneyland version or the Walt Disney World version that you like best?
It is the pre-changed version when Rex was still the captain of the ship.
The original.
And yes, the original is my favorite ride. And so I still put that because walking through the queue and like having the experience with the, you know, with the characters and seeing the pre-show video or like the flash goes off and a Wookiee like freaks out, like you just can't beat that to me. And then they have like the pit droids and stuff working on the ship that was added later. But I still love it. I think it's a great ride. It's something to me about riding in a star transport is a lot of fun. I think it's better, frankly, than Millennium Falcon Smuggler's Run in a lot of ways. It's just a great ride. And the Disneyland one and the Hollywood Studio ones to me are you can swap them in and out. It doesn't matter. There's something about that indoor line, though. Like indoor.
Yeah,
line.
I was gonna say the ride itself is the same. The Hollywood Studios version is so cool.
You just
outside.
I mean, it is like to see the AT-AT, like, or AT-AT, however you say it, you know, out there just so menacing and cool, and then you know, Darth Vader will come out on a stage in that area. It's incredible. So it's I would say it's one of my favorite rides. Maybe my favorite ride, actually. And I stand by it.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that's One of my favorite memories is the first time we took our kids to Walt Disney World. We did that Jedi experience with them, and at the time we had no idea what it was or how cool it would really be, and it was like that just Disney classic experience that just blows the parents' doors off, and it instantly becomes one of those core memories that you'll have forever. And we had three of our kids up on stage wearing the Jedi cloaks, holding lightsabers, getting a couple seconds there to duel back and forth with Darth Vader, having that big AT-AT in the background right next to it, stage there. It was just such a cool thing.
I was just talking to Paige literally just the other day, and I was telling her how, because I was talking about like prep for the show and my daughter loving Pixar and stuff now. And I was saying one of the weird things for me moving out east was almost like a culture shock, because I felt this very like personal connection to Star Wars and Pixar, but I'm just talking about Star Wars in this moment because Lucasfilm was in Mill Valley, where it's like 35 minutes away from where I grew up. And, you know, now like Industrial Light and Magic is right in San Francisco with like the Yoda statue and stuff on the water fountain. Yeah, I've been in the lobby. I haven't like gotten a tour of it or anything, but I've been there. I've seen the lobby. I've talked to people who work there. It feels like it's part of my culture, because it's literally like they had the opportunity to go down to Los Angeles, but like all these people that were doing, you know, stuff early days in Industrial Light and Magic, they were all in the Bay Area. And so, you know, Lucas was there and he filmed American Graffiti in Petaluma, which is somewhere my wife and I lived for a while. Like all of these roots and stuff to Lucasfilm kind of, to me, go back to where I grew up. And so I felt like almost like this proprietary sort of feel toward Star Wars. I had an uncle who like had all the stuff and whatever.
Yeah.
And so it was like a shock to me when I came out in here. I'm like, oh yeah, it's kind of for everyone, isn't it? you kind of forget about that. But you know,
You guys watch my stuff.
Cool. Like you with the Celtics, I would imagine. So you know. Yeah, but it's cool though. It's great to see it, you know. So such a worldwide phenomenon that everyone loves. It's incredible.
So with that just absolute over-the-top love and passion that you so clearly have for all things Star Wars, and being somebody that's been going to Disney in the parks since you were a kid, tell us, what was it like going to the parks for the very first time when you got to experience going into Galaxy's Edge and Batuu? What do you think about that area of the park?
I think I might have cried, actually. Seriously, like no joke. I was completely blown away by it and just absolutely stunned. Paige and I went for the first time in Disneyland in January of 2020. So we just literally, like, I had this feeling, ooh, like, we need to
just
go
got
now.
It in.
I know. I was like, we have to go now. Like,
disturbance in the force. We must hurry.
I was like, you know, the Rise of the Resistance is opening up this week. Let's just go. Let's just do it. And I just remember being like, this is the coolest thing. I did Savi's workshop on that trip. You know, cool. we went to Oga's, we did like everything, and there's really no describing Galaxy's Edge. It's like somewhere that I want to be. It's somewhere that I would like to actually take my laptop and go sit in like Docking Bay 7 and work. I could just see myself there, like spending time there as a local. But regrettably, I don't live close to Disneyland or Disney World anymore, so there's nothing I can do about it.
I've always said that's like a missed business opportunity for Disney, is they should set up these like little hotspot workstations with like really solid Wi-Fi and just like rent it out like per hour or something, and just have it be hidden. So like if you're in the parks, you really don't see them, but they're set up in a position where if you're like at a workstation, everything in front of your field of vision is just a different area of the park. I think Disney could make a killing doing that, because who the heck, who wouldn't want to work in the park all day? That would be amazing.
If I had my dream job at this point, I used to think it would be like, you know, being a multimillionaire and having my name on a building and all this stuff. Like, no, I just want to be a bartender in Oga's Cantina. That's all I want to do.
That's all I want to do
for the rest of my life is be a bartender there. So if I ever end up giving podcasting, or, you know, you just don't see me anymore, that's probably where I'm going to be, either there or in the hyperspace lounge on the Disney cruise, you know, serving up $5,000 drinks.
I think that's every Disney podcaster's dream, right? Is you get to retire and go live near a Disney park and work somewhere,
pretty much
somewhere in the park. So my dream Batuu job is getting to be one of the interrogation officers on Rise of Resistance there in the hallway.
Yeah.
I just want to bust people's chops all day long and give them a hard time, and then come see you for a drink over at Oga's. Have you pour me a cold Jedi or something.
A cold fuzzy Tauntaun. I have so much regret that I never got to and will never get to go on the Star Cruiser. But it just wasn't meant to be. So, oh well. And another life.
Yeah, I mean, since you bring that up, let's go down that path there for a quick tangent here. What do you think, if you're rubbing your Disney crystal ball, what do you see Disney doing with that space in the future?
I think they should turn it into a deluxe resort. I think that it should be available for people to go to. I think that, you know, it should be open to guests, just like you can go into Animal Kingdom Lodge and go see that. I think you should be able to roll in there and check it out. Because I think that, you know, this is a conversation that has nothing to do with the incredible Ahsoka, you know, episode 4, but it was really just this very upsetting kind of exclusive club for people who had the means to go or had the invitational, you know, golden ticket to go. And that sucks, you know, because it's expensive enough to go to Disney, and so it sucked. But I hope that they don't, you know, completely take a bath on it. I hope that there's opportunity for people to be able to go in there and see, you know, the performances and, you know, experience, you know, the captain and everything like that. But the people that I've heard from it, you know, it's, for them, it's like become a family, the Halcyon. And it's kind of weird, you know, in a way that, like, okay, well, it's a resort, you know, it's just like this really expensive hotel experience. But I can see how it's upsetting for people that it closed. But I do hope that Disney does something to make it more accessible, because I think that Walt is probably, you know, defrosting his cryogenic chamber with his with his anger about the fact that, you know, it's not for a dad sitting on a park bench watching his kids on a merry-go-round. It's for people who are hustling on YouTube or Instagram or whatever. And I'm not trying to be negative. That's just the fact. And so it's a bummer. But I hope that they make it accessible to people, whatever they do.
Sure. I mean, a $4,800 price tag is just, I mean, that's as extreme as it can get for, it's hard to picture a working class family with two or three kids trying to be able to save up for that type of experience. It's, it's intense. Yep. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they keep it a hotel and do something with that, or if they level it and use it as future ride space or something like that. It'll be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But again, I never got a chance to ride it and never, or experience it, and never will, but you know, whatever. I mean, life goes on.
yep sure does. So let's we'll get it right on to the episode we have you on here today to talk about. It is episode 4 from the Ahsoka show, airing now on Disney Plus. Before we get into episode 4 though, why don't you give everybody out there what have your impressions been of the show so far through the first 3 episodes of the show?
The first episode was genius, for sure. I believe that the first episode came out of the gates swinging, directed by Filoni himself, and it was incredible. The second episode still had, you know, I felt like it was still kind of getting its feet under it, and so there was, you know, a lot of just kind of like patience and watching and seeing how Ahsoka and Sabine were kind of going to connect with each other and what the tension was there between those two characters, and especially seeing like Sabine's arc of her cutting her hair and kind of leading everything back to the very end of Rebels, when Ahsoka's in that white robe and they're talking to each other, when she's looking at the mural of her and Kanan and Ezra and everyone. Episode 3 was fine. I'm really glad I wasn't on that episode, to be honest with you, to talk about it with you guys. But it's been good. I've really enjoyed it. I mean, I stuck through the Book of Boba Fett, and that was like one of the worst Star Wars things I've ever seen in my life. So this has been a refreshing...
Yeah, that was only good until we got to Mando season 2.5.
Good grief.
Luckily, they had that in there to save that.
Yeah, but it's been good. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm not someone who comes out, you know, with my claws out for Star Wars saying you ruined it or something's, you know, critiquing every little thing. I try to look at things as more of like a holistic view of like, okay, who's directing this? What's the story? You know, what am I supposed to be looking for here beyond just fan service? And I think that it's done a really good job of doing that, but I trust Dave Filoni. I trust what he's doing. I mean, he is truly the apprentice to George Lucas's master. So, you know, and I think he's actually become the master himself in a way. Jedi Knight Filoni. Yeah. So yeah, I've loved it though. I've really loved it. It's some darn good Star Wars is all I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the feeling last week after episode 3, like part of my kind of gut instinct was like, here's your chance, give a hot take, like talk about how boring it was. It was so slow. It was so stupid. And like, you can really like let that frustrations out. And I kind of thought about it for a second. Was like, no, I'm going to wait, let the whole series play out. And then like, just like with Game of Thrones, like I didn't want to like really put it down until like it was finally over. It was like, okay, like now we have the full body work. Now we can really dissect it. And I'm so glad I didn't go down that road last week. And I had said like, you know, I have ultimate trust in Dave Filoni here. I'll wait until this whole story plays out. And I have a feeling that by the time we get through the whole series here, I will definitely come around and there'll be something more here in this story that grabs me. And I did not have to wait long. Episode 4 immediately turned that corner for me.
Yeah.
But before we kind of dig in hard here on the episode, you are somebody, and another reason you've been a perfect guest here to come on the show here today is you are another guest that has been a big fan of the Clone Wars and the Rebel series with Ahsoka Tano in the past. So yeah, as somebody who's invested that much time and watched all of those shows, what were some of your favorite characters originally on those animated shows? And are they still your favorite characters now, seeing them in live action, or has kind of your feelings changed at all on any of them?
So for those of you who are, no one sees this except for you and I, Johnny, but this is my favorite character for all times. I'm holding up an R2-D2 figure, the Elite series from Hasbro. I don't think we've ever gendered R2, but that's my favorite character, like by far. When it comes to the animated series, that's though, awesome. I have to say, like, very quick anecdote, because I know this could go really long. This episode here, this show, I came to the animated series late, and I'm really embarrassed about it, but I never wanted to watch them because I didn't think they were for me. And I'm sitting in the theater watching Solo in 2018, which, by the way, was not my favorite bit of Star Wars. And Darth Maul comes up, and I'm like, wait, what? And I literally leaned over to Paige, I'm like, he's dead. And some guy leans forward, he's like, he was cut in half, and then he was, you know, kind of tormenting Mandalore, and then the Night Sisters, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh. So I texted a buddy of mine, wait, I'm like, listen, dude, do I need to watch this? He's like, you need to watch it. Here's the essential episodes in Clone Wars. Skip around, but it gets really good. But I watched all of it. Like, I've seen Clone Wars twice, and I've seen Rebels 3 times. So even though I'm kind of a newcomer, I've been watching. I've seen them. Like, it's been,
you've
5
caught
years.
Up. You're invested.
So I'm very I'm very caught up. I'm very invested. I'm very into it. And I have to say, I love Ahsoka Tano. I think she is an incredible character. I think her storylines are so utterly compelling. So I what's funny is that I would say that some of my favorites are her and actually Sabine Wren. And so to me, the fact that they are like the pinnacle of this entire series is really fantastic. I would say that those have to be like some of my all time favorites. I think that Ahsoka is an incredible character. I have some hot takes on Rosario Dawson's take of it, but, you know, I think it's great. She's incredible.
Awesome. So last question I'll throw at you here before we get into the episode 4 here itself.
Okay.
For the fans out there that do not have that long history of watching the animated content, what is one of the most important pieces or stories that you know of that involves either Ahsoka or Thrawn or any of the other characters from the team there that you just feel is so utterly important that somebody that doesn't have that experience, really, you want to make sure that they understand and they know as they're watching the rest of the series here?
I think that the one thing that everyone needs to know, I mean, you can get into like all of it, right? You can get into so many things that are so specific. But I think what you really have to know is the turmoil that Ahsoka went through when she was accused of murder and she was, you know, kind of cast out by the Jedi Council, and what that did to her as someone who, you know, Anakin was trying to make things right, but she was like, I've been burnt, I'm not going to be burnt again. And kind of how that's really affected her whole story and her whole arc through Star Wars. And, you know, I think that's one of the big things that people need to look at. And the other big thing that people need to look at is that she and Sabine have a very similar story, and that neither one of them really chose what they got. It was just kind of like thrust upon them. So like before, and these are all spoilers, so if you don't know, I guess sorry.
Yeah, no, we're full spoilers here. Oh, all good.
Before Kanan sacrificed himself in Rebels, and you know, he died, and it kind of like spun everything out of control toward the end of the series. He was training Sabine as well. So you basically have like these two crashing narratives of Ahsoka and Sabine having masters, you know, or trainers who let them down to some degree, whether or not it was their fault. Anakin, it was his fault, but whether or not it was like their fault or however it came down, like they have trauma from their experiences. And so then they're left vulnerable. You know, they're left to kind of question who their family is, what's going on. Obviously, Sabine has this entire really kind of tragic story with, you know, the Purge of Mandalore and her mom and kind of her being outcast from her family and all that kind of stuff going on with what she was dealing with. So I think that if you just look at like the tragedy of Ahsoka and Sabine's stories, and even if you just like read on like Wikipedia or whatever and get the gist of it, it really helps explain the show. Cause otherwise you're like, who are these two people that are upset with each other? Like my dad was asking me, my dad has watched all the live action Disney Plus shows and he's watched like all the films, mm-hmm. but he's never watched any of the TV shows. And so he like texts me with all these questions and I'm like, Dad, if you just watch Rebels, it would explain everything. But truly, like I think that those are really like, frankly, the top two things that you need to understand about the show, because that explains like, you don't need to know who, you know, Baylan is. You don't really need to know anything about Hui Yang. You just, those two characters by themselves really kind of tell you everything. And I think that's extremely important.
So did those two characters work together a lot towards the end of Rebels, or are we seeing kind of, is that part of the kind of the untold story where it kind of happened somewhere in between where we didn't pick up on that?
There is a lot of kind of in between where we don't really pick up on as much. So like I said, you know, Sabine was very, very close to Ezra. In fact, there's like canon that after a couple of years after the Battle of Endor, like they get married. So, you know, she was very close to him. She was very close to Hera. But Ahsoka, you know, was always kind of, or Fulcrum as they would call her in Rebels. She was a little bit more aloof, kind of more of just someone who kind of showed up when they needed her. And so like, I feel like, and I could be wrong about this, and I'm always willing to be proven wrong or to be corrected, but, you know, Ahsoka and Ezra kind of had more of that connection in the world between worlds. With him like pulling her out of that battle with Vader. And so, yeah, there was a lot of things that were unsaid and unspoken. And there was some stuff in this episode that was revealed to us that we didn't know about, like, you know, Sabine's and Ahsoka's relationship. So, yeah, there's a lot that we're still learning, I think.
Excellent. All right, so let's get into the episode itself here. Right off the bat, what did you think of episode 4 and how does it kind of rank compared to the other three that we've got so far? Has it been your favorite episode so far of the series?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, as soon as they landed on the planet Cetos, where everything kind of went down, where, you know, they're trying to get you know, trying to get the map unlocked and calculated. At the very end of that episode, I was like, this is giving me like Japanese tea garden vibes in this, you know, in this place. It's nearly a perfect episode almost. I mean, it is very darn well close to being a perfect episode. It was fantastic. It's truly like, it might be actually one of my favorite episodes of Star Wars that I've, like, from Disney Plus Star Wars that I've seen maybe since. It's really hard to beat when Luke Skywalker shows up in The Mandalorian. It's really hard to beat that. But it's extremely good. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was exactly like I kind of hinted at there earlier, or touched on earlier. It was exactly the episode that I needed to, like, really just push me off the cliff and get me fully bought in now and fully in on the story. Like I said, those first three episodes, I respected the quality of what they were doing. I could tell that the fans of the animated series that had put in that time could really were getting way more out of it than I was. So I was happy for them that they were getting that payoff for all that time that they invested in these characters. But every episode would end, and I'd just be like, "Meh, I don't know. It's not for me yet." This episode, completely game changer. Every single step of the way, every part of the episode, there was no part that I was like, "Oh, I see what they're doing here. They're building some more story." Just right out of the gate, even from just the conversations there at the ship, I could just tell that, like, there was something different about this episode. It was up in a different level that we just haven't seen yet so far in the series.
100%.
Right out of the gate there, we start off with them kind of talking at the ship, trying to reach out to Hera. You can see that the comms aren't working. They can't get a hold of her. And then Ahsoka and Sabine are outside the ship, and we get really Ahsoka kind of doing a little foreshadowing for us and calling Sabine out and asking her flat out, "Can I count on you?" And I almost got chills with that with that scene there, and it carried the rest of the way here. I'm kind of making notes as I go through and watch the episode, and every time there would be like a quote that just really jumped out to me. I was like, "Man, this quote hit." And that was that first quote there when she said, "Sabine, can I count on you?" And she answers back, "You know you can." So how did that moment hit for you?
That was honestly such a pivotal line for me in the episode. I mean, they both have each other's back and, like, in the day-to-day survival sense, but they obviously want really different things, right? So, like, Ahsoka just kind of wants to continue on this path of making sure that there's no more war. And Sabine's like, "Whatever we need to do to get Ezra back, that's what we're going to do." And so they really aren't doing much talking to each other about, like, what those things are and why.
Yeah, what's your goal?
And so, you know, while they need each other in a way, they're also kind of using each other. And you can really, like, you can always, like, count on Sabine, but mostly just to be, like, a loyal friend, which is, like, obviously why she chose Ezra versus destroying the map later. And I think that on some level, Ahsoka had to have known that's what was going to happen. Which frankly, you know, had to make her decision to hand over the map, you know, that much more of a gut punch. I know I'm kind of jumping ahead there, but there was so much foreshadowing in that. And I think that, you know, it's even more heartbreaking in a sense too, because, like, there is a history of, like, apprentices letting down their masters, whether it's, you know, Anakin and Obi-Wan, or her and Anakin, or, you know, I mean, even this guilt that Obi-Wan, I'm sure, must have felt by, you know, letting down Qui-Gon by not being able to provide the proper training for Anakin and having him ultimately turn to the dark side. It was a huge, I think that was a huge way to start the episode. And it really, like, when I saw that, I was like, "Wow, that was, that was something." And then even on the second viewing, it really kind of hit even harder for sure.
Yeah. Like you said, you could just tell right out of the gate that there was just something different about this episode, and just scene after scene, there would be just individual lines that would just really hit, which brings me right to the next part of the episode, where we flip back to the other side of the coin there, with Baylan and Morgan talking to each other, and we get that line from Morgan once again, kind of not really having the full faith in Baylan's team there, and says that those guards won't delay them long, and Baylan looks right at Shin and says, "She will." After that, another just killer kind of back and forth line for me, where Morgan asks Baylan, "Is that a note of fear in your voice?" And he just responds with experience, and just chills. Yeah. Like I said, just every scene just absolutely crushed it for me in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, there's Baylan has been such an interesting character too, because we don't really know that much about him in the beginning, and then as the episodes go on, it's like layers are kind of peeled back a little bit more and a little bit more, and we almost got to see not everything, we got to see like almost his full arc in a way in this episode, because like there was so much about him that you know, he's stoic and he's powerful and he has experience, but we don't really know what that is. I mean, the whole thing is just like crazy. And then kind of flipping a little bit farther back, just to where like when they were on the ship shortly after the "Can I count on you" line, you know, Ahsoka tells Sabine like, sometimes we have to do what's right regardless of our personal feelings, and you can like feel the weight of her walking away from the Jedi Council, you know, kind of into just the void of being a mercenary. I mean, it's huge. The whole episode had a lot of weight to it, and it was just, you know, I don't want to keep saying it was incredible, but it was incredible. Like, I don't know what else I can say.
Yeah, this is a full-on geek out episode here. This, like I said, it hits on every single element, I think, of Star Wars that we as Star Wars fans come for. Like, you get the lightsaber battles, you get fantastic writing, you get emotion, and it's not just an easy journey the whole way through. We're like, oh, here we go. We got two good guys, we got two bad guys, and boom, the good guys always win. There's just a great arc in just this one episode alone of things going up and down.
Well, I felt like kind of a lot of Star Wars lately has been a lot of layups, right? So like Mandalorian, great show, really, really great show, but a lot of layup episodes, right? Where each one kind of tells its own story, and then it kind of wraps up. Obi-Wan Kenobi was 100%
adventure of the week.
It was like a layup series. I mean, it was just like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Darth Vader, Obi-Wan, boom, we know what's going to happen. This one and Andor have really done the exact opposite of that. And so I think that they're going to continue getting a lot of love because of that. And providing that they're going to be moving on this trajectory of incredible storytelling and fantastic pacing, it's going to be, it's going to continue to hit, I hope.
Yeah, definitely. This was, like I said, the episode for me that is just now my whole outlook has changed, and now I'm just over the moon excited for next week. I cannot wait for the next step in this journey to see where they're going to take it next. But going back to kind of where we left off there on the episode, we get those attack droids finally catch up to Hu Yang at the ship, and we get some bot-on-bot action here that would make the likes of even Hiro Hamada, I think, proud, seeing those trade punches there. Is that the first time we've ever seen two droids fight back-to-back in a movie? It's always a kind of a hero and a droid, or guy and a droid. That might be the first droid on droid.
We've seen R2 electrocute some droids, but never, I don't think, quite like this. My favorite part of that entire scene, seriously, was when the attack droids like put their hand over his mouth and he was like muffling help. I was just like, that is so, my first thought was, I guess that it makes sense that they're sound comes out of their mouth, but that's not really where I would have thought. I would have thought it was somewhere else. Really funny. Because he's such a funny character, and he's also such a deep character too. I mean, there's so much about him that goes back, you know, super far as like a lightsaber he's like a lightsaber architect, I think it was his official title. So I mean, it was like just enough levity in the episode without, you know, making it all funny, but I think it was very well placed, and it was really, really good because he's a great character. And David Tennant like kills it at that part.
Yeah, that's the thing about this episode. Just everything just felt like perfect. Every time a different section of the scene would end, if you would think back, like, okay, what would I change or what didn't I like? It was like, nope. Yeah. They nailed it. They nailed that scene along right there. Now, a question that it's going to make, I'm sure, fans like yourself that have put in that time and invested in and watched the animated shows maybe roll their eyes here for a second. But for those fans out there that have not seen all that, talk a little bit about Huang and how much was he involved in the Rebel series? Was he a major player? Has he always been kind of the right-hand man of Ahsoka for a long time now, or is he a newer character that they brought in kind of just for this show?
Oh man, this is loaded. I did not do as much Huang research as I could have, but I do know that he's been around for quite a while. His first appearance, I believe that it was in Clone Wars. He's been, you know, he's kind of been around the block. I believe that his first appearance was in Clone Wars, but he always kind of, to some degree or another, has been connected to Ahsoka. He was with Ahsoka in Rebels quite a bit, but he was never really as much of a prominent character as we're seeing in these later, you know, this live action show. And the comics, you know, so first of all, he's pulling this completely out of my hat like a crazy person. He's been around since 25,000 BBY, which is before the Battle of Yavin, for those of you who you know, maybe just go way too deep into this crap. He's so old. How old is he?
Oh, let me show you my BBY tattoo that I have.
That's a good idea. He's so old, in fact, that he actually helped Grandmaster Yoda create his lightsaber and find the Kyber crystals for it. He, in the comic books, he actually helped Mace Windu develop and build his lightsaber. So his lightsaber architect, you know, sort of abilities have been going around for a while. And I think it was in Clone Wars that there was a scene when he was helping younglings make their lightsabers as well. And kind of like an ice cave kind of thing. So he's been around the block, but we never really got as much of Yuang as I think we could have maybe deserved. And this is definitely delivering, because he's a really good character. And David Tennant's been doing his voice since the animated series as well. So it's pretty cool to pay off, you know, that he's getting to be in it a little bit more like this.
Yep. All right. Now, so for me, as that fan that has not watched all those animated series yet, it makes me relieved that I didn't know that backstory on him, because I was getting major vibes that he was going to, when those bots showed up, they were going to like just lightsaber him in half, mm-hmm. or Shin was going to be there and would just decapitate him. Had that feeling that like we're about to lose this character. And had I known that he's has that much history, it would have just made it even harder to watch that series. But thank goodness he made it out alive.
I want to see him wield the lightsaber, frankly. I want to see him go like full on General Grievous and just go crazy.
That would be awesome.
If that happens in the show, just wrap it up. I'll be happy. That's what I want to see.
Yeah. That's what that was the my favorite part of that episode 3, those first 4 seconds when Ahsoka walks through the door and he's got the four kind of whatever those training lights.
He's got like the lanterns like from Tangled on his arms. Like,
oh, it looks like General Grievous right there.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was a cool moment there.
Right.
All right. So speaking of cool moments there, the power gets cut from the ship, and Ahsoka, you can tell right from the look on her face that she knows that this doesn't mean there was just trouble with what he was fixing on the ship. There's obviously the bad guys are here. So her and Sabine go running outside. We see Sabine pop on that Mando helmet and go out in full Mando gear. And for the first time, we see these two fighting side by side. Ahsoka, lightsabers rocking, and Sabine full on Mando gear, using all the Mando tricks in the suit there, using the armor defense and using just her own hand-to-hand combat skills, blasters, the grappling hook. We saw all of it come out. So what did you think seeing those two fighting like that side by side?
It was incredible. Sabine is so cool. She's such a cool character. And I think this was the first time we got to see her in this live action show in like her full on Beskar armor. It was really great. I mean, she obviously doesn't get hurt by the lasers. It's powerful. She's able to stand her own. And you know, I love too that they do so well together. I mean, it's like a choreographed dance. They're like, you know, pulling these bots, you know, in front of others. They're talk about doing layups. I mean, it's almost like they're, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson out there. I mean, they're just like doing
feeding
it.
Them the rock.
So it's really cool. And then there's kind of like, I'm pretty sure I had a note about this somewhere. But there's like this, so they have this like final blow where it's like this big, you know, and they're kind of standing there and you see them all victorious after pulling down
hero
all these
pose.
All these and then as soon as that happens, like some of those red leaves start to fall, and it's like so samurai style, and obviously we know that like Lucas originally
big samurai fan.
Well, he wanted the Jedi to basically resemble them and their temperament, their fighting style and stuff like that. It was incredible. And then, you know, of course, that's when we get Hu Yang, you know, saying like, hey, don't forget, you guys are really good together. So take my advice. You won't regret it. You know, I mean, he sees it and it's great. Watching them together like that is really good because they are really good together. Yeah, they're incredible.
Yeah, so that's why kind of I'd asked that question a minute or two ago was when he said that line, I was like, oh, shoot. See, this is where I'm missing a piece to this puzzle here. I'm missing kind of some of that backstory between the two of them. But you could tell from that quote, obviously, there is some experience here with these two working as a team before the show.
Yeah. You've never seen Rebels?
Just like the highlights. I mean, I've seen the clips that everybody's kind of shared, but it's just with the house with six kids, it's just like you only have so much time in the day to watch Disney, Marvel, Star Wars content. Yep. And unfortunately, I just haven't. I'm hoping that eventually here the kids start getting into it more. They're just kind of on the outskirts, even with the Marvel stuff. Like there'll be certain characters they gravitate towards, so they'll go see those movies when they come out, but I don't have one in the crew yet that is like, Dad, I am fully in anything Star Wars, anything Marvel, I'm in, let's go, we're doing it every single time. So we're still working through that Padawan training here.
I'm just curious. Shame. That's literally why I'm here. Is to bring all the my wife has never been more attracted to me than when I can talk about you know, what's going on when and different timelines of Star Wars and the lore and everything. It's really something to see. She loves it.
Honey, tell me more about this BBY stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So next part of the episode here, we get, I had mentioned last week, I think one of my favorite characters as somebody kind of from the outside looking in on this live action series, Hera. Hera is a badass. I love every time that Hera is on the screen so far. I am fully bought in. She is the type of character that I like. She gives me the same type of vibe and the same type of feeling I got from watching Mando. Back that first time when that first episode came out in Disney Plus launched, I could tell from 20 seconds of that episode, like, this guy, that's my guy. And I felt the same way with Hera the whole way along here. What's it been like for you seeing Hera in live action?
Hera is not my all-time favorite character, I have to say. She's fine. I think that her character has always just kind of been okay. She doesn't really stick to my ribs like the other ones do. And I love her arc with Kanan Jarrus. I think that their love story is very compelling and cool. And obviously we know Jason there. Their son is in this show, and it's, you know, great. But I mean she's great. She is great, but just not my all-time favorite. What I will say, however, is that she is played by the great Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is one of my earlier childhood crushes that I remember. I remember seeing
same her. With Obi-Wan
here
too.
We go.
He crushed on her hard enough. He put a ring on it.
Yeah. He's quite a bit older than her too, and his daughter had some things to say, but she was Royal Pain in Sky High, that film. And I remember being like, whoa, hello, I guess maybe I'm attracted to evil villains, which is great. And maybe that's why I don't like her in Star Wars. No, I'm just kidding. No, she's good.
She's too nice.
But yeah, she is married to Obi-Wan. How cool is that? Yeah, she's a very cool character, but she's not doing enough in this series. And I think that the series really isn't about her anyway, but it's, you know, she's cool. Just not my all-time favorite.
Right. That's what I think I've enjoyed the even though clearly she has the smaller role, they found a good way of every time she has a line, it's worth your time. It's not just touching back on her storyline just to like remind you like, hey, there's somebody here that's green and has things coming off their head that exists in this world. Like they're bringing you back to her character and giving you a line that really hits. And I kind of got that vibe there as well. When she says, once a rebel, always a rebel. Mm-hmm. Is that a quote that we've heard before on the animated side? That just, it felt like one of those lines where it feels like one of those lines where I would have assumed that like the animated fans were like jumping up and down like, yeah, she said it. She said the line. It just felt so natural.
You know, I don't know. I'm not saying no, but I just looked it up. Everything looks like it's like from I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. That would be a question for one of your other Star Wars nerd guests. I'm going to tap out on this one.
No, all good.
I'm man enough to say when I don't know. And at this point, I don't really know.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. And we also pick up Carson in this scene as well. Was he in the animated series?
As far as I know, he's only been in the live action stuff. Live action. And I think it's because he is such a big Star Wars fan. He's a very good actor. Paul yep. is very funny. Have you seen Kim's Convenience on Netflix?
No. No. Oh
my gosh. Nope. It's so funny. He plays a Korean shop owner in Toronto. It's actually where Simu Liu kind of got his start as an actor. Sure. It's so funny. Well worth your time. Really good show. He has like this really thick Korean accent in the show, and he's like a totally different character. But seeing him in Star Wars is a joy. I think that Carson's really funny. And one of the things I love is later on the episode, he says, Lock S foils are in attack position, which is a direct line from A New Hope when they're all, you know, entering into, you know, the attack on the Death Star. So, he's great. Yep. I love seeing him back. Love seeing him in The Mandalorian. He's just such a fun, kind of like a police cruiser style, you know, authority in the show. He's great. He's really fun to watch.
Yeah, that got me up out of my seat when I saw his face show up on the screen. Like I said, I'm sure there's multiple moments where the Rebels fans are like, "Yes, I remember this from the Rebel series," and seeing his face was like, "Yeah, I remember that guy. He was in Mando."
Yeah, no, it's like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme, you know, pointing at, there he is. So I get it. I get it completely.
There he is. Yeah.
So.
All right, so then we bounce back to the other side. Here again, we get back to Morgan and Baylan, kind of back at the their little central hub there on Cetos, where the map is in the pedestal there. And Baylan makes it clear to Morgan that her calculations need to be deadly accurate, or they could be lost to the void. She tells him to have faith, and he responds with another one of these lines that just got the hairs standing up on the back of my neck. Faith, I lost that a long time ago. So again, just hinting that there's more to this guy that we just don't know, and they are doing such a good job at putting those little teasers, those little moments out there where you just cannot wait to learn more about this character.
Would you like to hear my Baylan theory now, or do you want me to hang on to
absolutely.
It absolutely? Okay.
No, let's bring it out now.
So what we know about Baylan is that he was, he survived the attack on the Jedi after Order 66, right? And so following that, he kind of went out as a bit of a kind of like a mercenary, right? And so, you know, I think that he was genuinely really, really hurt by the Jedi and their basically complete lack of integrity. I mean, as we kind of saw going from, especially in the Clone Wars, right? Like going from Attack of the Clones, Clone Wars into Revenge of the Sith, they were just basically political pawns, just like sitting in their big chairs, you know, passing legislation and judging. And so I think that for him, like this is a guy who we don't know a lot about him, but what do we know about him? We know that he is, he has integrity. He very, very certainly has some kind of a code that he lives by. And he is, you know, he's someone who's methodical. He's a powerful Jedi. He was a powerful Jedi Knight before he had to go into hiding. And then he turned into a mercenary. And so my theory is that Baylan's skull is out to try to set things right. And I think he's after Thrawn. And I think that the only way that he's able to do that is by playing along with what Morgan's doing. And you know, by basically, not showing all of his cards, he says a lot of things in this episode that I think are fairly, elusive. And, you know, he says, so faith, I lost that a long time ago. Well, what did you lose faith in? Right. I think it's the Jedi Council. He says, you know, he talks about how, this is a little bit later again, but he says to Ahsoka, your legacy and your masters is one of death and destruction. And you know, his whole thing is just like the whole Jedi order is broken. And all he sees is, a Jedi like Ahsoka, who is just kind of out to get hers, right? She's just kind of doing what she needs to do. We know that he knows that Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader. How we know that, I'm not 100% sure, but we know that to be true. And so I think that he's like, these Jedi are a bunch of crooks. And, you know, he says, I'm not starting a war, but Thrawn will. Like, he says all of these little things that I genuinely feel like he is trying to do something on his own. I mean, he's a mercenary, right? So I think that he's trying to stop Thrawn on his own. And the only way to do that is to kind of pull everything together and to get to where he needs to go, which obviously, you know, in this case, we know that they're using the Eye of Sinon to look for the pathway of Peridia. So that's my theory. Whether or not it's correct, I don't know, but I think it's a lot better than a lot of the Morok theories out there. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
We'll hit right into that Merrick theory there. So many different... This felt like, to me, like the Mephisto theory with WandaVision, where week after week after week, we kept saying, like, okay, Mephisto's coming next week. We're going to get Mephisto. I'm sure of it. Mephisto's coming next week. And then all of a sudden, we blink and the show's over and there's no Mephisto. Right. And I think we just experienced that on the Star Wars side of it here, because we get some... For all the great fights that we've already got in this episode so far, we get, it just goes up again, another level. And we see Sabine and Shin face off against each other, and we see Ahsoka and Merrick go head-to-head. And unfortunately for the Merrick fans out there, and the Merrick is Ezra, Merrick is XYZ, former Star Wars character, we find out that Merrick is no more, and we will not be finding out, apparently, who this character is.
So as someone who hasn't really invested into the animated series, what was your reaction, or what were your first thoughts when you saw that Merrick basically just turned into like smoke?
Yeah. So it's one of those things that, like, for me, kind of, there's a suspension of disbelief, obviously, when you watch a show called Star Wars. It's all make-believe. It's all fake. But when I get into a show like this, I want everything that they do. Obviously, it's ridiculous and silly and magic and whatever, but it all has to be consistent. So it does annoy me a little bit that some Star Wars characters barely get touched by a lightsaber and turn to dust. Some characters get stabbed and they just go to the hospital and they're fine, and then other ones turn to green dust. There seems to be no consistency here, so I'm sure maybe there's some reasoning behind the scenes and the deep, deep canon that I do not understand or have been exposed to yet, but all it did was confuse me.
Okay, well, we'll put on your seatbelt. Here we go. So it took me a quick second when I first saw that, and it dawned on me, oh yeah, you know, Morgan has ties to the Night Sisters. We saw the Night Sisters temple in episode one. And so, what we're talking about is when Morok, he gets this incredible scene when he gets struck by Ahsoka. He falls and he's just kind of sitting there, and we're like, oh, that's it. Maybe she can unmask him, whatever. And he just like vaporizes into smoke. But the tell in this scene specifically was that he vaporized into green smoke. And so the green smoke is something that we saw a lot of during the Clone Wars, especially when there's this whole fixation on Maul and the Night Sisters and their temples and stuff. And one of the things that they did, and this, we see this a little bit too in the video games, and like Fallen Order, for instance, we see that they actually use like the essence of the dead to resurrect them and to inhabit bodies. So he was presumably and I could be getting some of my facts a little bit incorrect here, but the gist of it essentially is that he is an essence of a person. We don't really know who it is, but he was just basically inhabiting, you know, a figure or a body. So when he was struck down, he just vaporized because he was nothing to begin with. We see this a little bit. So in Tales of the Jedi, which, by the way, was just like brilliance in and of itself. The final episode of Tales of the Jedi, if you've seen it, we see
I have
that
seen
Ahsoka...
that. I did watch all those Ahsoka episodes. So that's, I got those big vibes from that, from this face off with Merrick, the same scene we kind of got there in Tales of the Jedi.
But so if you recall during that episode, so she's, you know, in a farm and she's keeping low, kind of letting things happen without getting, you know, interfering. But when she does finally interfere, she fights off that Inquisitor and wins. And if you remember, when he hits the ground, And his head is just laying there on the ground, it collapses. So it vaporizes and vanishes. So that's essentially telling me that Morok and this Inquisitor from Tales of the Jedi were essentially made of cut from the same cloth. I don't really know exactly what that all means and stuff, but what I'm thinking is that Morgan has something to do with it. And I don't really know what that is, but, you know, I think the Shi is using almost like this free labor, right, of these guys who are just able to kind of like, she's like calling the Night Sisters to be like, hey, we're going to create, you know, this army of people who are going to work with us and who aren't going to like, you know, have their own hangups and things like that and just be warriors. So I don't really know exactly, you know, all how that falls together or where the pieces lie, but it does certainly, it is more interesting to me than it just being some random person. Because it begins to kind of play a little bit more of a role in the overall narrative of storytelling and real life. In the live action stuff, we don't really see much of like, you know, that sort of spiritual realm of Star Wars. When we see like when they first put the map, you know, into its place and it's levitating and it's green around it, you hear, you know, Baylan say witchcraft. He's specifically referring to the Night Sisters. So that's kind of what I think is going on there.
All right, good. So maybe this character in Morgan Elsbeth that felt like just kind of an add-in throwaway character in the Mando series when we saw her show up there with the spear, maybe there's more to come here with Morgan going forward here.
Yep.
All right, so we get back into the battle here with Sabine yelling to Ahsoka now that she sees Mariko down, tells her just to go after Baylan and she'll be fine. She'll take on Shin one-on-one, and we get another one of these just fantastic lines from this episode where Shin, and to me this might have been Shin's best episode. I love some of the kind of back and forth between her and Morgan last week, but Shin is really stepping up her game here in episode 4, and she hits her with the "you will regret this decision." And to me they really focused on Sabine's helmet coming off it during this fight scene and that being a big part of it. And with that line coming out, I was getting that vibe, or the same vibe I was getting there almost back with Hu Yang back at the ship. Like, are we about to lose Sabine again here? Is Shin going to take her out? And that'll be kind of this driving force that pushes Ahsoka the rest of the way. So I thought that was a really intense scene there.
Yeah, that whole scene was really something. I loved seeing the two of them kind of have this, they almost had like this resurgence of a second chance of a duel, because, you know, the first time, Sabine got stabbed, and I was texting a buddy of mine and we were like laughing about someone made a medical chart of where Qui-Gon got stabbed versus like where Sabine got stabbed. And we're like comparing them and how you might survive it. It's insane. Star Wars fans and Disney fans are the worst, but, It was cool to see them kind of have...
That's the joke, right? Is nobody hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans.
Exactly. It's pathetic. But it was really nice, I think, personally, just to see them have another go at that. And it was very... The payoff was great. I mean, we thought... I keep, like... Whenever there's an inkling of Sabine having the Force, I'm like, no, please don't have the Force. Because it's just not for her. And she puts out her hand and, you know, there's the kind of the drawback. And then, you know, she says to her, you know, "you have no power." And then Sabine just kind of like collapses her wrist and the grappling hook comes out. I'm like, perfect. Great. That's exactly what I want to see out of a Mandalorian. I don't want to see her become a Jedi. I want to see her use what she's equipped with and be like, you know, the best version of that she can possibly be. So it's, it was a great payoff. I was extremely happy about it.
I'm so glad you said that. Yeah, for me, that there's nothing that will get me to roll my eyes faster than, oh no, we really need this character to be able to do this thing that they've never been able to do before, but because they really need to do it, they just magically can do it.
It's like convenient.
That is
for the plot.
Laziest form. Yeah, exactly. It is the laziest form of writing, and it drives me nuts. So I just, it makes me excited every time. Like in last episode when she kind of put her hand out for the cup, I was like, if they even move that cup even a fraction, I'm like, I'm gonna flip out. Like, you cannot do it this early. And then I thought, when she put the hand up like that, I'm like, oh no, please don't do it again, please don't do it again. And it just such a perfect way, like you said, she was a Mandalorian in that scene. She used her brain. She used her Mandalorian armor there to get her out of that pinch there. So loved the way they handled that scene.
It was great. Did you notice that in the beginning of the episode, the cup was still on the table?
No, yeah, I didn't
it was
catch
still
that.
There. It's really funny because it's just like when Sabine's like going through her bag and trying to get everything together, you can see like the cup is just literally still.
Oh, okay,
like,
sure.
There. Yeah, pretty funny
all
stuff.
Right, no pun intended. Props to the prop guy there for making sure mm-hmm. that was
yeah,
still
exactly.
on the table.
Exactly. It's pretty good.
Another thing that sets Star Wars in this show apart from the Game of Thrones final season that just will always get under my skin for the rest of my days, where in the final season of that show we have a Starbucks cup sitting on the table with Khaleesi, and
incredible.
Here we are in Star Wars remembering to have that cup in just the right place to mm-hmm. Show that it was still kind of close to Sabine there. So
exactly.
Thumbs right. up to Star Wars there. Well done. Mm-hmm. Well done.
Exactly.
But then the other side of things here, we get Ahsoka showing up at the map area here on the edge of the water and going toe to toe with Baylan. Just dialogue back and forth, just so perfect. Just classic Star Wars, perfect lines back and forth against each other. And I was getting big Thanos vibes from Baylan in that scene where he comes out with the quote, "One must destroy in order to create." So what'd you think about this part of the episode?
So it was a huge surprise to me. One of the things we talked about kind of early on together when we were talking about me coming on this episode is that I'm basically a spoiler-free kind of person. So I do not watch trailers at all. So I went back a little bit and I looked at some of the early trailers and I saw that there was one where it was kind of all about Anakin. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad I didn't watch that because... you know, when he is saying, you know, about Anakin talked a lot about you or whatever, she says to him like, oh, he never mentioned you. Like, that was like, oh man, these guys, they're ready to go. I mean, they are like ready to go, but it's also kind of a civilized, elevated conversation. And I can see how you can, you know, draw comparisons to Thanos on that because, you know, there was certainly like this very self-seriousness from both of them, but you're not going to get like Tony Stark quips back where he calls him, you know,
right.
Grape chin or whatever. And so it was, you know, it was really good. I mean, I loved how he tried really, really hard to poke at her and she just wasn't going to let it happen. You know, all she really cared about was, we cannot let Thrawn out. I don't care what your goals are. I don't care about your intentions. Like, this is not something that we're going to do. And he really tried to kind of push her with like, well, Anakin, you know, he turned it off Vader, and I bet that can't be easy to, you know, have sitting on your conscience or whatever. Because he really made it seem like it was her fault for leaving the Jedi Council, for you know, leaving the Jedi Temple to begin with and like abandoning that. You know, so it was kind of one of the first times we've really seen somebody, because ever since we saw Ahsoka kind of walk away from that and she became. She kind of became somewhat of her own, you know, person. She's sort of the authority figure, you know, she's the one that's like putting Mando in his place. She's the one that's, you know, making Luke Skywalker really go back to feeling like an apprentice again, because she's so smart and she has experience. And so to see someone kind of in a way put her in her place was very different. And it was I was really happy with the way that they set it up to where she didn't go back on her heels, and you can tell how cool, calm, and collected she is as a very, you know, practiced force wielder. She's not a Jedi anymore, right? So it's really interesting to see like how well she has been able to kind of harness the true nature of the Force as someone who is patient and collected and you know, takes their time. It was great. I mean, it was really, truly a very, very moving scene. And then when the lightsabers come out, I mean, gosh, the only reason why I would have wished I would have been on your first episode of this is because I loved the scene when she was in the temple, just like walking around looking at stuff, because it took its time.
Yep.
And it really allowed you to kind of sit in the space. And this was like, they had their lightsabers and it was like almost like 45 seconds of just hearing the contrast between the noises of them. I mean, it was
so great.
Yeah.
It just makes you wish you were in an IMAX theater watching this. Like
yeah.
I want them, when this show is over, just combine all eight episodes, put it together as like a ticketed mm-hmm. event at your, your local IMAX theater where you can go and just watch it start to finish, because I would love to see this fight scene on the big screen with that movie theater quality sound.
Did you see that just today they announced that episode 5 or you know, the fifth part will be released in 10 theaters in the United States?
Wow. It is smart. I would go 8 weeks in a row. I would go watch this in the theater and pay movie price to watch, if we're going to get episodes of that quality. Now, had I done that for episode 3, I would have been like, this is a ripoff. This was horrible. But for episode 4, makes up for it. If you go to 3 and 4, then fine. They cancel each other out.
But we're getting episode 5 in theater. And it's going to be, I think, September 12th? It's gonna be in 10 cities. It's going to be in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. Washington, D.C. is already on a wait list. I'm sure at this point Philadelphia is too. I would love to go, because both of those are well within driving distance for me. But we are due with our second child in like 3 weeks, and I don't think it would be the smartest thing for me to do to go all the way to go see Ahsoka, the fifth, you know, installment, while my wife is at home with her toddler and I'm at a movie. At 8 o'clock at night. Not a movie.
This sounds weird.
Not a movie. A TV show. I already kind of floated it. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, it's okay. I'll watch it downstairs on my TV. I just can't even imagine. I mean, it's but back to it. I mean, the thing that, because what I tried to do is I tried to watch it at first and then take my time and just soak it all in. And there's a couple of things that I noted in the first episode that I didn't write down, but I just like, I'm going to remember this. And one of them was just the fact that the contrast between their lightsabers was just, I mean, it was magic. Ahsoka pulls out her lightsaber and it's like angelic, it's smooth, it's assured, it's this really beautiful hum. And then Baylan, you know, first of all, she pulls her lightsaber out first, which is very interesting to me. She initiates it, and then he does his, and he said, "Well, this is inevitable."
And she attacks first as well. Mm-hmm. I noticed that she was made the first move on the fight.
And so he says to her, "Well, this is inevitable that we were going to end up here." And so he triggers his lightsaber, and it's like fractured and loud and chaotic. And so the standoff between the two of them is just, I mean, it's impeccable, because they're amazing fighters. And even though he's far stronger than she is, which we see, I mean, the scene takes its time and it ends up paying off like so incredibly well. And again, I mean, just like the consistent hum of hers, the fractured style of his saber. And there's this one scene, there's one like split second in that scene where it goes like, it's almost, you know, you see kind of the camera panning across, and it's his lightsaber, and then it kind of pans closer to her and you hear hers, and just the
difference.
I mean, you get this dynamic that is just powerful and incredible. And there's really never been a lightsaber battle that so specifically focuses on the sounds of them like that. I mean, we hear them and stuff, but we never really see it like quite like that before. So it took its time, it did it incredibly well, and props to Peter Ramsey, whether or not he directed that. I mean, I know he directed the episode, but whether or not, however strong his hand was in that particular moment, whoever did it, congratulations, you just like did the best Star Wars I've ever seen in my life.
I didn't want to fall victim to recency bias here, but that's all I could think about watching. Even before that scene ended, we were just seconds into it. I'm like, I have a feeling this is going to be the best lightsaber battle that we've ever seen in the history of Star Wars. And I haven't gone back and kind of remembered and done that research for all the classic lightsaber battles that we've seen, Duel of the Fates or any others. But I think, like I said, at the risk of falling victim to recency bias here, that was easily some of, if not the best lightsaber fighting that we've seen in any Star Wars project.
So you can, if you want to do your research and follow up on this, or your homework rather, you can follow up with Paige by asking her. I'm a very harsh critic of media, like extremely harsh. And I will never ever walk out of a movie and say, that was my favorite movie I've ever seen. Because there is kind of that feeling of, oh, this was great. I'm really thinking about it. But I did watch this and I was like, this is something. Like, there is really, really something here. And just, I mean, even to the point of where, you know, at one point she like holds the lightsaber up over her head and kind of like the motion like this, and she's just holding it up.
Ugh,
that's an exact callback to, first of all, it's a callback and a foreshadowing of when Anakin does that. That's like one of Anakin's signature moves. We see him do it like right before he gets his arm blasted off by Dooku in Attack of the Clones. And so, you know, that's something that we see him do. We see him do it in the Clone Wars. It's one of his big moves. And then we see her do it. And it's just like, wow. I mean, it's a callback, and it shows that he had influenced her training, but also we're going to, you know, we're going to see him later. He's coming. And that's just, it was incredible. I mean, it was absolutely incredible.
Wait, what?
Oh, whoops. Sorry.
You mean the episode didn't just end panning out to the ocean? I shut it off.
Sorry,
I thought
I'm
it
sorry.
Was over. What are you talking about?
Did you not see the poster that Star Wars posted on social media this morning?
Yeah. Yep. I was going to bring that up. I just,
Save it. We'll
get to it.
To
the past episodes. Yeah. You've heard me say that the way they do trailers just drives me nuts. So
yeah,
props
we'll
to you
get
for
there.
Being
we don't
able
have
to avoid all those.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. It's coming. We will get there. All right. So let's try to wrap up this part of the battle here. We see the Shin escape from Sabine first. She gets back to Ahsoka and Baylan battling, and we see that just panic wash over Ahsoka's face, where she feels like, oh no, I lost Sabine. For her to be here, something must have happened to Sabine. Baylan is able to kind of overpower her, get her to the very edge of the cliff here, and then Sabine shows back up, and we see, as we mentioned earlier in the episode here, that foreshadowing that comes around where she gets the map in her hands and unfortunately does not. We'll see how it turns out. But I got, again, not to constantly go back to the MCU vibes here, but I got Peter Quill vibes there in that moment. I'm like, what are you doing? You were right there. How did that scene hit for you?
Well, first of all, when Ahsoka like slams Shin, I keep forgetting her name, Shin.
Shin.
I keep, for
Shin,
some reason, S-H-I-N. Her name just keeps on escaping my head. I don't know. I need to like write it down in my notes. She's incredible. She's a Ukrainian actress. She's fantastic. But her Star Wars name like evades me for some reason. When she like slams her into the rock, I was like, ouch, that's gonna do it for her. And maybe Ahsoka's giving in to her anger just a little bit. But yeah, I mean, when Sabine's holding holding the map, I'm of two minds. The first one is I'm thinking, wouldn't it be funny if she shoots it, but it deflects it, it just goes right back at her? That's not funny, but I was like, that would be a really crazy plot twist if she just like act, you know, had friendly fire on herself with her laser.
Whoever had Sabine shooting the map, reflecting and killing herself in the death pool, you win the grand prize.
That would have been a very like wild situation, but that's not canon, so we wouldn't have seen it. I wasn't surprised. I wasn't surprised by it at all, because, you know, I knew that she was fragile, and I knew that she has a real kind of like, she's in it for familiarity. I mean, you know, we know that there is in this same, I don't want to get over my skis here, but we know that she's fragile. We know that she has a lot of stuff going on. And so the fact that she does hesitate, it stinks.
Human,
but
human.
It's not as bad as Peter Quill doing that, because that almost ruined, that almost ruined Infinity War for me, because he had it and he was just being stupid. So Sabine wasn't being stupid. She was just being smart, because it would have deflected and killed her. I think she knew that, honestly. I mean, that's just Star Wars physics.
Now, we also know, obviously, how the episode ended with what happened to Ahsoka, but in the moment, obviously, we didn't know where they were going to go with that. What were your feelings when Baylan knocked Ahsoka off the cliff there? Did you expect to see her using some Princess Leia type Jedi powers and floating back up magically on her own, not to bring up a bad Star Wars memory, I'm sure. Or did you think she was going to land on something? Who was Hu Yang going to show up with the ship and she'd be standing on the ship or something? What? How did you think that that scene was going to end there with her?
I thought truly that it was going to end with her hanging from a cliff and holding onto it. And that she was going to hoist herself up and figure out a way to climb back up there and then figure out a game plan. You know, that was my thought. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking she was going to, they were going to get back to the now broken map. They were going to put it together. And I thought when they kind of hinted earlier that you better make sure that those calculations are perfect. Otherwise we could get lost in that void, and I thought, okay, so here's what's going to happen. Bad guys are going to get away. Ahsoka will climb back up. She'll pick up the map. They'll put it together, and it'll be like 80% done, and they're going to risk it, and they're going to try to go after that path with just 80% of the knowledge, and maybe we get an episode where they're lost in the void or two before they kind of fix things and get back on track there. But yeah, I think for both of our guesses, I think it worked out.
I was just going to say, you know, after that happens, I really, really loved Baylan's exchange with Sabine and kind of how he uses his manipulation to, you know, get her to be like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go get Ezra. We're going to get things sorted out. It's going to be okay. And by the way, Ahsoka never trusted you, and that's why your family's dead. And that was like, whoa. Like, I didn't see that coming. during Rebels, you know, we see a lot about Sabine's family is very highly featured in that show. And so during the purge of Mandalores is kind of when, you know, he reveals that, oh man, you know, that's when your family died. But in Rebels, what we end up seeing is that you know, they didn't die in Rebels and the Rebels episode with Gar Saxton, because with Ezra's lightsaber, Sabine kind of fights him off. And so instead of being able to kill her mom, Ursa, she like is able to, you know, she's able to deflect him and get things going. And they kind of are able to patch up their relationship a little bit. Cause it's very like very bad for a while there. And so apparently, during the Great Purge and the Night of a Thousand Tears, Ursa, Alderic, her dad, and Tristan, her brother, all die. And I was like, I don't remember that happening. And so I was looking it up, and I was like, I didn't see it anywhere. I didn't remember that being a thing. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh yeah, well, like this is revealed to us through Baylan that it's kind of Ahsoka's fault that they're dead because she didn't trust you to be able to do your job or do what you were going to do, which was just even more reason for her not to like shoot the thing and hand it over to him. So it was, you know, it was really, that was kind of huge. And one thing too, we didn't mention that I wanted to just briefly talk about is the reason too that Ahsoka was so weak to begin with and why she got knocked off the cliff is because she grabbed the sphere, the map, and it burnt her hand. So it kind of left her a little bit, you know, debilitated a little bit. And, that put her in a position where, you know, she was ultimately able to be defeated in that moment. But the other thing too is like we see a little bit more of that, Dathomir Night Sister's magic, where it burns her hand because, you know, it does have that magic in it, which in Star Wars it's magick magic. I don't know, like I guess that's just lazy writing, but that's what they call it. And so that's the big reason why it burned her is because it's being like the energy flowing through it is just so powerful. So, yeah, it's interesting to kind of see how he was able to sort of twist her arm and get her to go willingly. And then of course, you know, we see Shin, she like starts force choking, Sabine and Baylan just like will not stand for it. He's like, hey, I gave her my word. We're not doing this. And that's noble. Right. I mean, he's truly is noble. And it's very interesting to see a noble Sith.
There's honor there. Yeah. That's why I like your guess of what we're going to get with this Baylan character here going into the future. And because I've kind of got that same vibe where there's honor behind this guy. And there's some more to his story that we don't know yet. And I think we all kind of assumed he was going to maybe not kill Sabine. But I think going into that interaction, I'm like, he's just going to knock her down or hit her in the back of the head with the back of his saber. killed or something like that, knock her unconscious. There's no way he's actually going to keep his word and bring her on the ship, but he does. He, like you said, he stops Shin from choking her out, and he keeps his word and brings her on the ship. And, and then we see the power of this new form of hyperspace, where Morgan is not phased in the least bit with Hera in the X-Wings showing up. What did you think there of seeing that that form of hyperspace travel for the first time?
It definitely gave me pretty big Last Jedi vibes, where you know, they blast through, where Leia Dunham you know, blast through and sacrifices herself. It was crazy. You know, I mean, it wasn't perfect. There were some things about it that I thought were kind of weird, but it was great. I mean, it was really interesting to see it. I kind of felt like, I don't know. I mean, I kind of felt like, you know, perhaps like they, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I think that it was a little bit awkward of a move. But overall, I mean, it was cool. I guess that's just kind of how you need, I mean, what, that's just kind of how you need to get to, you know, Peridia. So whatever it takes, you know, whatever, all roads lead to Peridia, even if they, you know, massacre X-Wing fighters in the process. So it was fine. The Eye of Sion was interesting. It really reminded me of the Eye of Sauron from Lord of the Rings. I was like, that's kind of lazy writing. But it was cool. Not the most necessary thing, but cool.
And then from there, we wrap up the episode, and we kind of head back down onto the planet there, and the camera focuses in and on the cliff and the water there. And as the camera pans out to the ocean, we start to see kind of something moving, swirling, showing up, taking form on the left side of the screen there. And you start to get those vibes like, are we about to see the world between worlds here? Is that what we're starting to see here with Ahsoka? And sure enough, we see Ahsoka first laying down there on that kind of blue flooring there underneath her, with the space and galaxy kind of behind her in the background. And we hear, "Hello, Snips," in the background. What was that like for you, hearing Anakin Skywalker?
Well, thank God for subtitles, because I would have missed it otherwise. It was cool. It was very, very cool. My wife was watching the final part of a baseball game, and I had my headphones in, and I was watching it on my iPad, just like Dave Filoni intended. I was watching this great episode on my iPad. but it was still just as dramatic, and I was excited. I mean, I was like leaning over to Paige, like, "Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! It's Anakin Skywalker, and we're watching worlds and this and that." She's like, "I don't care." It was incredible. I mean, I'm such a freaking geek for stuff like this. I love it when you get callbacks. I love it when, you know. I mean, so I think that Hayden Christensen, first of all, got a lot of bad rap for his role as Anakin. Could they have cast 100%. It better? Sure. But, you know, I mean, I was introduced.
And could they written it better, too? I think he fell victim to just some very weak writing.
Oh, it was. If you watch,
I don't like this sand.
Is a little bit. Oh, that's my favorite line ever. That line could have been great if it was delivered properly.
I have that right next to my BBY tattoo. It says right here, "I hate sand."
If you watch some of like the behind the scenes stuff, George Lucas is just so funny, because he's talking to the cast and he's like, "Well, you know, I was just thinking maybe, you know, well, you know, so Anakin, he's at this point in time, he's just feeling a little bit like let down by the Jedi. And so you just kind of go over there and whatever you're feeling, you can do, that's fine. But remember, I mean, you know, he's going to be Darth Vader eventually. So, you know, that's just kind of what we're thinking, and we're going to go with it." And Hayden Christensen's like, okay, great. So, yeah, I mean, God bless George. He's not. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But anyway, seeing Anakin back was really exciting for me. I really thought Anakin was like the coolest ever. And in Revenge of the Sith, I know he was the bad guy, but I was like so into it as a kid. And so seeing him back like that in that black outfit with the scar in his eye, you know, full on Revenge of the Sith Anakin, it was really, really exciting. You know, and when he said, like, I think it's like, you know, I don't remember what he says, like, you know, "Hello, Snips," and then he says, I was wondering when I was going to see you or what. For some reason, I didn't write down what he said exactly because I was just too in the moment. But it was really cool. It was a great way to end it. And it was a huge cliffhanger. And I loved how she called him Master. And then she said Anakin. It was just a real, like, we haven't seen them interact together since Clone Wars. We saw them interact together in Rebels as Darth Vader and as Ahsoka, but it's different. He's Darth Vader. We haven't seen the Anakin Ahsoka, relationship. I guess we saw them kind of in Tales of the Jedi, but that's sort of a different thing. But yeah, it was incredible. I mean, it was like, that's what we've been waiting for. Like, that is what we've been waiting for this entire series.
Yeah. So, and to me, there was some big time symbolism at that point of the episode as well, because we see just the, like, young, smiling, happy looking Anakin in the music to go along with that. And then it just immediately cuts to black. And if you had the subtitles on, I don't know if you caught it there, when it cuts to black, it said, yeah, Vader theme. So, and you hear that,
yeah, it's really
that
hard
powerful
to miss.
Vader theme. Yeah, exactly. You just cannot miss. So, a perfect, perfect teaser for episode 5. I think I would assume going into episode 5 that it's going to be more like episode 3 than it was episode 4, because for all those fans that don't know what the World Between Worlds are, I'm sure they're going to have to do a lot of that kind of explaining and kind of making it clear what the heck is even going on in that scene there. So I'm assuming the kind of the throttle is going to be pulled back a little bit on episode 5, but still, I think seeing Anakin on the screen, I think we're all going to be going into episode 5 jacked up, ready to go.
Yeah. Did you feel like he was really there? Because remember, this is taking place after Return of the Jedi, right? So he wasn't a Force ghost. He was just kind of there. Well,
yeah. So, it was confusing. It was confusing because that's when you hear him say hello, Snips, you don't see him. So as the camera starts moving, I'm thinking in my head, he's going to be a Force ghost, right? It's going to be a Force ghost. And then he's kind of far away the first time that they put him on screen there. And it's almost like they were trying to, like, make it a little bit vague. Like, you couldn't, I don't think, tell instantly, is he really physically there? Was he like Ezra? Was he physically there and pulled her out somehow? Or was this some type of Jedi trick that we didn't even know exists yet?
Yeah.
Where a Force ghost can pull somebody through through that portal there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know, like, what they're going to end up doing with it, because I mean, one of my fears is that they are going to, and I really hope they don't do this, but is that somehow, like, it becomes part of, like, a larger sequel canon, you know, where they start breaking some rules and creating, like, multiverses and explaining, like, you know, why Ahsoka wasn't around in the original trilogy, or why she wasn't around in the sequel trilogy arcs and stuff.
This is Ahsoka 616, not like, Ahsoka 222. Yeah.
Like, I just don't, I hope that doesn't happen. You know, I'm also kind of wondering if, like, the World Between Worlds moment, you know, will kind of be like when Gandalf fell into Moria. And we know that, like, you know, Filoni has written a ton about how he sees Ahsoka kind of that way. Is like, she's not light, she's not dark, she's just kind of her own thing, and she has her own code. And so she kind of does have a little bit of that, like, Gandalf, you know, the gray or Gandalf the white sort of, you know, vibe about her. Sans beard, of course. But I don't know. I'm not really sure what to make of it yet. I hope that it's, you know, I hope that it's cool. I know it's going to be cool, whatever, but I hope that episode 5 really gets into it. I hope we see a lot more of, you know, Clone Wars, Anakin and Ahsoka together. I hope that we get to see, you know, a lot of more diving into, like, what happened, like what was going on. Because, and I don't think they'd be selling tickets to 10 theaters in the United States if it wasn't going to be big.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. I would love to see that episode start off with give me a nice long scene, 8, 9, 10 minutes long, of all the way back in that time where, Anakin and Ahsoka were first back together. Mm-hmm. Show me some backstory, some stuff that we have not seen in live action before. And then at minute 12, 13, 14, then catch back up to where we left off there at the end of episode 4 and get into that World Between Worlds type stuff there.
The one thing that I'll say is it was great. But when I said this was almost a perfect episode, Anakin was so uncanny valley in that, And they did that thing where they like to really flex their muscles of like really panning on the face and be like, see, we deep faked. Isn't that pretty good? And it's like, yeah, it's not. It looks bad. You guys know it looks bad. It would have been better just to put Anakin Skywalker in it or Hayden Christensen as his adult self.
Yeah.
Because that would have just, but instead they had to deep fake it. Would have been fine. This whole thing. Yeah.
Yep.
And it just looks strange. And I saw a clip today where they basically pulled that exact his face and everything out of a scene from Revenge of the Sith when he's talking to Padme in her room and he's leaned up against the wall being smug. And you can tell. I mean, you can just tell that it's we're still trying to get the deepfake heavy technology CGI right. There. And it's it looked good. We knew who it was, but it was also like really, really kind of interesting. I saw someone posted on Twitter or X or whatever the heck. They said Ahsoka spoilers without context, and it was a picture of Yoda, but his face was like plastic and it was like all smooth, no wrinkles, whatever. And I was like, that's incredible. I would have posted that today on mine if I wasn't gonna be stealing it. But yeah, I mean, it was rough, but other than that, it was great to see him. I'm glad he's in the show. I knew he was gonna be. I just didn't know to what degree. Like I had a feeling, you know. So it was exciting.
Excellent. All right. So let's wrap it up here and get your predictions for where you think they're going to be heading here the rest of the way with this show. We have, what was that, episode 4? So we have 4 more. We're at the halfway point now. We got 4 more episodes Unreal. To go. And where do you think, Mr. Filoni is going to take us here the rest of the way?
I hope that we get, I really hope that we get more of a veil kind of pulled back about how Ahsoka feels about everything that happened. I mean, she's got a lot of trauma. I've kind of used that word a lot in this show, but she has, and you know, and
yeah.
When she, toward the end of Rebels, when Ezra pulls her out of the fight with Vader into the world between worlds, and then then Palpatine is kind of like trying to drag them into another world. I mean, there's like all this stuff that we just don't really know. I mean, we see it, but it's if you're just talking, not books or Wikipedias, and you're just talking about what we've seen on the screen, cartoon or otherwise, it's we don't know a ton. And so I think that being able to see a little bit more of that, how it's going to work, what it's going to lead to, possibilities, access and stuff. You know, I don't know. I would like to see. I think I would like to see where he is almost kind of like not real, and he's more of just like a spirit guide of sorts, or you know, almost like a force ghost where he's manifested himself in a way that's familiar, and maybe he takes her to different portals or different areas where they can still see different points in time, and he can like, you know, show them where things failed, where things went wrong, you know, regrets that he's had, you know, areas and their training that he could have done better, or you know, moments where he tells her he's proud of her and she did this really well or whatever. I would like to see a little bit of that, because then we can see a little bit more of them kind of interacting with each other and stuff like that, yeah. You know. But, you know, I mean, other than that, I think I trust what Dave Filoni's got going on. I think that him taking the reins on this next episode is very exciting, because it feels very pivotal and it feels like something that we have really, really been waiting for as Star Wars fans. You know, Obi-Wan and this show were the two that I've been most excited about. Obi-Wan left a lot to be desired, but so far this one is really hitting all of its marks. So I am, I'm very, very optimistic about it. I'm not even cautiously optimistic. I'm just optimistic this episode's going to deliver. And, I just hope that we get to see more of Anakin, but they're not going to show him at the very end like that and then leave us, you know, high and dry. I can't imagine.
Right. Right. Now, do you think we get, Thrawn in episode 5, or do you think this is a very kind of almost dedicated Anakin, Ahsoka background, explaining world between worlds, all that type of stuff, and then we get into Thrawn maybe 6, 7, 8?
I think we see Thrawn 6, and I think we see Ezra 7 or 8. That's my prediction.
Alrighty, sir. And do you have a final prediction where you think Filoni takes us here at the final? Do you think this is going to be ending on some type of major cliffhanger that builds into the eventual movie that he does? Is this going to lead us into, do we see maybe possibly Bo-Katan and Mando show up somehow, some way, and involve them where it's going to lead into the next season of Mandalorian? Or does this kind of kind of really clean up this part of the storyline? Where do you think they're going on the final wrap up?
I mean, this is extensively Rebels season 5.
Right.
6. 5. It's the next 5. Episode. Yeah, 5. And so I think that they may just kind of wrap things up a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, I trust the process, you know. I trust what they're going to do, and I'm not going to be a jerk and complain about it if it's not what I thought. So that's what I'm going to say. I don't know what more I can say about it.
And Dave Filoni, we trust.
That's, yeah, exactly.
That's a perfectly fine way to look at it, I think, exactly. Right now. That guy has proven that he's got the keys to the castle, and he knows what mm-hmm. to do with them.
The only final thing I'm going to say is, I know I said early on that I had a hot take about Rosario Dawson. I think she's great.
Let's hear that.
You know, I mean, she goes, she's great. She does a very, very, very good job of playing Ahsoka.
Too orange for you.
And,
right? Too orange?
Yeah, that's it. I remember her back in Trance, the Danny Boyle film, you know, back in 2013. Like, I've kind of seen her around a lot in the past, but I kind of wish that they would have just had Ashley Eckstein play Ahsoka in real life. I think she's fantastic. She's great. And so I kind of almost wish that they would have just brought her over into it, because so much of her really is that character. And yeah. She got so much hate from people when the character was first brought on, and now she has so much love, and there's, like, you know, she's just gone through such a journey, and she's such a phenomenal actress, you know, such a fantastic talent. And so I kind of wish they would have brought her back in for it, but, you know, I mean, Rosario Dawson, again, she's great. No complaints, but I just kind of almost wonder, like, what it would have been like had Ashley had the opportunity to take in that role. But that's the only thing. That's literally it.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll never know, but it does kind of make you wonder, was there a Saturday night at Lucasfilm where they brought Ashley Eckstein in, they put her in the makeup, and him and Filoni were sitting there and, like, all right, let's go through a couple of scenes and see, can this work? Is there a possibility here? Or was it just kind of right out of the gate going in a new direction? But whatever it was, anyway, I just, like, as you said, she is absolutely fantastic, and it's good to see how the fans have really come full circle. And now, I don't think it's out of the realm possibly to say she's one of the most beloved actors in the Star Wars family of all time. Now she is just mm-hmm. absolutely loved by all fans, but to her credit, I don't think she could have handled how everything shook out any better than she did. At no point did you kind of pick up on any negativity on her part, or jealousy, or criticism back towards Lucasfilm. She's been nothing but supportive to the Star Wars family and to Rosario through the whole thing. So mm-hmm. again, just nothing that we didn't, I think, already know, but just class act all the way from Ashley Eckstein.
100%. She's awesome. Yeah, I can't wait.
Ashley, if you want to come on the episode 5, 6, 7, 8, we can make room for you. You're welcome on the DMSW podcast, Ahsoka Recap Show, anytime you'd like to come on if you're listening, which I'm sure you are.
I invited her to come on to the World Showcase series, and she never even read my Instagram message, so...
She's actually quite rude. No, she doesn't read DMs.
I have a side door to get in touch with her if I wanted to, but I don't want to ask about favors. I'll tell you about it after we hang up.
All right, on the on the after hours show.
Exactly. So, well, listen, this has been really, I've been really looking forward to this. I'm so glad I got to be on this with you. 2 hours of talking about Star Wars.
Yeah, I cannot tell you how much I'm happy the way this worked out. This was awesome.
Yeah, Miss Tim, wish she was here. Maybe next time, and I'm really, really looking forward to you being on our Italy episode on September 18th. Don't miss that, please.
Awesome.
It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, it was an honor to be invited, and I had a lot of fun with you and Paige the other night recording that episode. So make sure, please, you guys obviously hear how much passion Steven has for everything Star Wars here under the sun. So if you are a listener of the DMSW podcast, this is definitely a guy that is worth your follow. Look him up on Instagram at The Parks Academy, and check out their podcast, The Parks Academy Podcast, in all your major podcasting apps. But the easiest thing you can do is definitely check out their website as well, theparksacademypod.com. You'll be able to find all their links, all the podcast stuff, all their sponsors there, and links to help these guys out on their show. So check out everything that these guys are doing. And Steven, again, I just can't thank you enough for coming on the show today and helping us get through episode 4.
Oh, man, it's been my pleasure. Call me anytime you want to talk about Star Wars.
Alrighty, sir. Sounds good.